Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Twanda Black, your host, and it's that time of the year. Yes, the top 10 issues to watch in 2017 concerning our education. It's from the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. And joining me, Dr. Steve Dollinger, who is the president, and Dr. Dana Rickman, director of policy and research. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Twanda.
Good morning. Great to be here with you.
Yes, 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 yes. I see that we actually have some new stuff this year.
Well, the top 10 are always hot issues. Some of them kind of circulate back, but yeah, we have some new ones on the list this year also.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're going to dig right in. Issue one, the shifting federal landscape and state policy. What's ahead? And you mentioned something before we actually got started that you thought was pretty good. So tell us what's going on in the federal landscape and our state policy.
Well, I think most of your listeners, Twanda, would remember No Child Left Behind was a big federal push for education reform for a number of years. And that's being changed now with ESSA, which stands for Every Student Succeeds Act. And basically, the feds have given the states much more latitude to run their own educational systems. So we, too, in Georgia are working on that now and are working with our State Department of Education. So that's a piece to stay tuned to.
You know,
yeah, and of course, we also, sorry, go ahead, Twanda.
Oh, I was just going to say, we are, I think a lot of people are really concerned with our new presidency and the people that he's putting in place. When you talk about education, we're really concerned.
Yeah, you know, with a new president and a new administration, every new administration has different priorities. And this one is particularly interesting that it's coming at a time when the relationship between the federal government and the state government, especially in regards to education policy, is already shifting. Mm. And so it looks like a time that it's going to be even more focused on the state level to ensure things like equity and civil rights and access. And so it's an opportunity for Georgia to really step up and create a state plan that works for all of our students.
You know, I see here that you are also, you know, you have to you're charged with the following: to measure school performance, the role of the state assessment system in teaching and learning, and how to intervene with struggling schools. I think that's just been such a huge thing for us.
It has been, and our state's working on a plan now that will be made public. They've had a lot of reach out across the state, forums and polls to get feedback. They're drafting a plan now. In fact, we've been part of that process. And the state plan, this new ESSA plan, will be public in June. So we encourage your listeners to follow up on that, look at it, and give their input, because the state really is open to input on this new plan.
Okay. All right. Number two, huge, and I think all over our country is very huge. Teacher recruitment and retention, keeping teachers teaching. Everybody is having a lull in retaining their teachers or even hiring. There's so many spots open. What's going on with that?
Well, you know, there's an issue with teaching, and we talk about the teaching pipeline, but the problem that we're having right now, the biggest problem is really the distribution of teachers. There are some areas of the state and some subjects that are frankly overstaffed, like we have too many, but then there's a really high need for hard-to-staff schools, rural schools, high-poverty schools, and a significant shortage of teachers in specialty skill classrooms like STEM classes, science, technology, engineering, math, special ed teachers, there's a really big shortage. And when we look at the data across Georgia, we have teachers leaving the classroom in relatively high numbers, and fewer students are electing to go into teaching as a career. And so in the long term, that's not really sustainable for our workforce, our teaching workforce. So we really need to look at how do we entice the best among us to come into teaching? How do we keep them there? How do we train them, provide the professional development and support that they need, and really create a professionalized career ladder for them while keeping them teaching in the classroom?
We just heard a very interesting piece of data last week that if we were able to staff at the lower class sizes we had before the recession, the number of teachers that Georgia would need to have those lower class sizes would be something like 20,000 teachers next year.
Wow.
That's a phenomenal shortage. And if the good news is if we could lower class sizes, it would be great, but the bad news is I doubt if we could find that many teachers.
My goodness. So are some of the main issues that maybe are they believing in the system? I know a big issue is money, too.
Well, it's really two big issues. Having a better working environment where mm-hmm. teachers aren't always being criticized is the problem with education mm-hmm. progress. And the second is, pay them a competitive salary. We're ranked low 20s in the country in teacher salaries, so that's not a good place to be if you're trying to recruit those new teachers.
That's right. Is anything going to change with that, overall, because teachers are just simply underpaid for what they do?
Well, over the past 2 years, the governor has had his Education Reform Commission, and they've really looked deeply into different recommendations around a couple of areas, and one of them really was this whole teacher retention recruitment. And throughout 2016, he had a teacher committee of about 90 teachers review his recommendations and give their feedback. And then there's some good suggestions out there, especially around the teacher climate, how the professional development system, the assessment system, could really help teaching and not be so punitive. Mm-hmm. So we have to wait and see if any of those recommendations are going to be acted on. But there's some good suggestions in there.
All right. I'm talking with Dr. Steve Dolinger and Dr. Dana Rickman, both from the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. We're talking about the top 10 issues to watch in 2017. And number three is leadership, new challenges, new opportunities. And you're talking about positive leadership at the district level, and how's that going for us?
Well, we just talked about teachers, and Twanda, these 10 issues are not separate. They really do intertwine.
Yes.
And second only to the teachers being the most important ingredient in improving our education in Georgia would be good leadership of the districts mm-hmm. and the schools. Mm-hmm. And with the changing demographics we have, schools are quite different than they were a decade ago. So the pressure on principals to bring a community together, let alone their staff and school together, is an increasing challenge.
Wow.
And also over the past couple of years with reforms in Georgia education, we have what we call now charter systems and strategic waiver systems. A lot of the decision-making and authority and strategic planning has moved from the state into the district. So district leaders and individual school leaders have a lot more flexibility, but also accountability in terms of how to get good student outcomes. And so the onus on these leaders is growing day by day. And so we need to make sure, much like our teachers, that these leaders have the professional support that they need to understand how different budgets work together, what kind of flexibility they have, how to support their staff, how to get their goals that they've set out.
Of course, we know Gwinnett mm-hmm. County has a great leader with Superintendent Alvin Wilbanks. We give another example here that not many of your listeners may know about. It's Mike Duncan down in Little Pike County. So mm-hmm. if listeners want to find out what a good small school system looks like, they might want to read that little piece.
I read that piece about him, and he's a phenomenal educator. He really is. So issue four is preparing the workforce, role for K through 12. And it says that, unfortunately, on this graph, there is a growing and persistent gap between openings and actual hiring taking place.
Yeah, we have what they call a skills gap here
right.
in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the gap between the skills that employers are looking for and the skills that our potential employees have. And, historically, the K-12 system, especially high schools, their focus was just getting students to graduate and give them that high school diploma, and their job was done. That has changed significantly in Georgia, and our CTAE program, Career Technical and Agricultural Education mm-hmm. Program, plus Career Pathways, that the K-12 system has gotten really involved with making sure that their graduates are not only ready for the next step of college or career, but a lot of times they're working on their career while they're still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a significant switch for sort of the mentality of the purpose of high school. But I think Georgia's sort of a leader in the country in their ability to do this. Their CTA program is incredibly successful. They have over a 90% graduation rate, and they're really aligning with employment needs of their local communities.
We have some other examples, again, across the state, not just in Metro Atlanta, but Carroll County Schools and Chatham County Schools are two other examples. Mm-hmm. We don't want to just, you know, raise up the issues, Twanda. We also like to point people in directions where they can find some solutions to these problems. So there are several in here as well as pointing out the problems.
That the work-based learning program is phenomenal, and I've seen it in action here in Atlanta. Very great. I've seen the students, high school students, you know, in professional environments, getting training very early on. So I think that's a phenomenal program.
And, you know, we're getting a lot of success around our college and career academies as well. Mm-hmm. These students graduate from high school with a technical certificate and then can go right into the workforce. And that's been an excellent partnership that we see good success.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Issue five is higher education barriers to completion. And these graphs are really interesting. So talk about what are the barriers to completion?
Well, our first goal is to get more kids through high school, mm-hmm. increase that high school graduation rate. But once we get them into college, we're finding a lot of kids are dropping out after their first year. They're having to take remedial courses. Mm-hmm. So part of it is have them better prepared, do fewer remedial courses. But then really good strategic programs like Georgia State University is using, where they support the kids with actually more counseling and track with the technology that's available to make sure these kids are still going to classes and doing their work as well as they can while they're on campus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the completion rates for post-secondary are a problem. The good news is that most students who graduate high school, a significant percentage of them go on to some sort of post-secondary. So there is a recognition amongst our broader population that something beyond high school is what they want for themselves. You know, the bad news is of those who enter post-secondary, after 5 years after graduation, more than half of them still don't have any kind of credential mm-hmm. or degree. And a lot of that has to do with financial aid, the cost of going. And that's something that Georgia really needs to look at. You know, we have the HOPE Scholarship, right. which is a merit-based mm-hmm. aid program. Mm-hmm. You have to keep a certain GPA average, to continue right. uh-huh. to receive that money. Mm-hmm. Georgia is one of two or three states across the nation that does not have a statewide need-based only financial aid program. And with the growing number of students living in poverty and first-generation students going to college, being able to pay for post-secondary is a significant barrier that we're finding in Georgia.
That's true. And you do hear that from a lot of the students saying, you know, I didn't make the grade point average, so I don't know how I'm going to do it, you know?
Well, and even those that make the grade point average, HOPE doesn't cover as much as it used to do, you know, just to the price tag of mm-hmm. HOPE. And so students who receive HOPE, it only covers a certain percentage of their tuition. So for very low-income students, even if they have the grades, it's still sometimes not enough to keep them going year after year.
All right, so moving to issue six, which is funding and equity for all. It says that discussions and policies around public education funding formulas for K-12 systems are shifting from a focus on equal funding across districts to considerations of equity. So tell us what that means.
Well, Dana mentioned earlier that the governor had an education reform commission that was looking at several issues, and one was the whole funding issue. Our old quality basic education funding formula was not a bad formula. It's never been fully funded, was one of the issues. But the new look at this is to really give additional funding to districts because of some of their unique student needs. Mm-hmm. We mentioned also the increasing number of kids across our state who live in poverty. While there are a lot of smart kids who live in poverty, they have some additional challenges that they may need a longer school day or week or even a year, and that does cost additional funds. So mm-hmm. we need to take a look at that with some different types of weighted formulas.
Yeah, other states across the country have begun to go this way just with the sheer recognition that some students cost more to educate than others, and not necessarily poor students, but gifted and talented students,
right.
CTA mm-hmm. students that have higher lab costs, students that are struggling in reading, for example, need additional reading services. And if we shift to a formula similar to this, districts would earn money for students based on their particular needs. Are they an English language learner student? Things of that nature. Mm-hmm. This was a recommendation from the Education Reform Commission. It has not been brought to the Georgia legislature like we anticipated, but I would anticipate to see further discussions around how do we equitably fund students versus just every student getting the same dollar amount and give districts the flexibility to be able to prioritize where they want to put their money.
Exactly, because some have more than others, you know, more issues than others, or more talented and gifted kids. If it's a CTAE, same thing. In here, in the Action Steps for Georgia, you talk about examples in Michigan and Maryland and Wyoming that seem to be working, correct?
Yeah, and what they did something similar, which Georgia has not done. They are moving to a funding formula like this based on needs of the student. But what they also did was a cost study, is how much additional money does it actually cost to educate a student living in poverty, for example, or how much does it actually cost to provide additional services for an English language learner. What Georgia has not done is a cost study of the actual cost to reach the goals that we've set out. Mm-hmm. We are committed to a certain amount of money to fund in education based on our tax base. And then so the question that Georgia's looking at is how do we divide the pie that we've agreed we want to spend versus how much is it going to cost and then how do we divide it? And so these other states really looked at how much is it going to cost mm-hmm. before they went to the step of, okay, how do we want to divide it up?
Right. I'm talking with Dr. Steve Dolinger, President Dr. Dana Rickman, Director of Policy and Research from the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. We're talking about the top 10 issues to watch for in education in 2017. And we're at issue 7, which is early learning, increasing quality and access for all children. Are we doing a good job here?
We're doing a really good job, actually. It's one of the most important parts of what we call the birth to work pipeline. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the Governor's Education Reform Commission, and while they didn't address funding to a great deal, they really have put a good focus on the early learning. We've been a leader for years, but there's still a lot of parts of this that we can improve upon to really make Georgia even more competitive across the country.
Yeah, and I think the focus of our improvements is on the access issue. You know, there's sort of two basic mm-hmm. tenets of high-quality early learning. One is the quality, which I think Georgia has always led the country and is continuing to sort of push the envelope on how do we increase quality. And we're not just talking about pre-K here. We're talking about zero early learning, little infants all the way through mm-hmm. School-age children. Georgia's done fantastic. Our focus now is really looking at access, especially for low-income families. You know, high quality costs a lot of money, and it can be very expensive to find early care, especially for infants and toddlers. And so Georgia is trying to find different ways to increase access to high quality. And I will say we're very excited that the governor's budget this session for 2018 has put additional money, I think about $57 million, into the child care subsidy fund. And that is going through the legislature now. But that's a huge step in trying to ensure that low-income families have the resources they need to get access to high-quality early learning.
Exactly.
And so it's a very positive step for us.
Mm-hmm, because they can go, but if they're not learning anything, it really doesn't make too much sense of what's happening right now. And I was looking at the graphic here about quality-rated facilities and county participation rates. You've got 1-star, 2-star, 3-star. A lot of 1-stars on here.
That's a good question for your listeners to ask at their mm-hmm. local daycare center. You know, are you a 1-star, 2-star,
exactly.
3-star? If they don't know, ask them. Mm-hmm. And if they're not rated yet, ask them why they haven't volunteered to be rated, because that's a real good barometer for you to know how well the training is for your child at that school or
exactly.
at that center.
Exactly. I agree.
I will say, even with the preponderance of like 1-star centers, for example, that I still applaud those centers. That 1-star means that they have good basic health and safety and basic education for children, but it's also an indication that that center is really committed to quality. They're committed to looking at the hard questions and figuring out how can we do better, where can we improve, and they have put in place plans to figure out how to get them to a 2-star. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's less important if they're a 1, 2, or 3-star. are, but it's important that they get rated and really commit themselves to quality and continuous improvement. And that's what we're seeing in these participating centers.
Exactly. So accountability there.
Number eight.
Exactly.
Student mental health, time to take center stage. This is so important. I am so glad that we included it this year. Mental Health America's 2015 report on the condition of mental health care in America indicates that 8% of Georgia's children have a serious emotional disorder. That's over 91,000 children.
It's a huge issue. You know, we typically focus on the research and advocacy efforts in education. Mm-hmm. But when we really take a look at what's keeping kids from moving through that birth to work pipeline, oftentimes it is their mental health.
Right.
As you say, like almost 1 in 10 of our kids have a problem, but only about half of them receive any kind of support. So that increases their challenges of trying to be successful during school. So this is an issue that we felt we just have to raise up and bring to a broader audience and let them pay attention to this issue.
Exactly. Does that move does the school system, are they going to be taking a look at that? Because you know when kids have issues. I had a parent here a few years back. Her daughter had some learning disabilities. She did have some mental issues going on. And her mom said, oh, it's nothing wrong with her. She's just special. But once they went and got help, this child excelled. She was talented and gifted, but she needed help with her mental issues.
Well, you know, that's the key. And I will say that the Georgia Department of Education has really stepped up in trying to identify and support mental health issues in their students. In fact, most students, as Steve mentioned already, a lot of mental health issues in Georgia and children go unaddressed. Mm-hmm. Those that do go addressed, about 80% of them are through the public school system. Now, Georgia DOE is not really equipped to have that particular burden. And so they're doing what they can in terms of providing supports and assessments. The problem that we have in Georgia is that we don't have enough mental health professionals, especially outside of the metro area, mm-hmm. to meet the needs of children. And so what's happening in schools is that they're able to identify, yes, this child has a need, they mm-hmm. get the assessment, they get them evaluated, and then they go to refer them to a mental health professional, either a social worker, psychiatrist, psychologist, and there are none. There are entire counties in Georgia that don't have even one child mental health specialist, so you have to go a couple counties over just to find a doctor or
a
support specialist.
You know,
and so we have a real crisis on our hands mm-hmm. in terms of the workforce to support children's mental health.
I see that it says the positive behavioral interventions and supports program is one way Georgia Department of Education is addressing some of these issues. But again, if you're understaffed, how is that going to help?
Well, and that's where they really uncovered the problem, mm-hmm. is that the PBIS that you're talking about is sort of a school-wide program that helps increase the culture and the climate of the school, mm-hmm. make it a very positive, engaging place to be. And it's what they call sort of tiered intervention, where the whole school gets good sort of anti-bullying, pro-character yeah. kind of mm-hmm. things. And mm-hmm. as children need more and more supports, they get deeper and deeper interventions. And this is where the schools have really identified, you know, they have those 2 to 3 children that need very deep interventions mm-hmm. for very traumatic mental health issues, and there's no one to refer them to for help. And so if you're a class of 22 to 28 students and you have 1 or 2 students in there that is suffering from trauma, PTSD, that's really going to be disruptive, and they need supports to figure out how to address the needs of that child.
That's phenomenal. We just pray that it you know, get some steam under it and moves on, because a lot of our kids are in trouble and they need help. They really do. Number 9, the economics of education, breaking the poverty cycle. This is another huge issue that's on the list almost every year, I believe. And it's saying that a Harvard University study has shown that American children are less likely than children living in other developed countries to grow up and make more money than their parents. It's a little disturbing.
Well, it's even more disturbing when we bring it home to Atlanta.
Yeah.
As you look at the 50th largest cities in the country and the ability for a young kid to work their way out of poverty, mm-hmm. Georgia ranks 48th out of those 50 largest communities.
That's crazy.
So it really is a challenge for these kids to even do better and mm-hmm. break out of that poverty cycle. and we talk about schools that are failing or underperforming, is it really the school or is it the community?
Mm-hmm.
It's really difficult for a school to outperform its community. Some do. We have just a report came out last week of schools that are beating the odds and doing better than you might expect. But when we have our fastest growing populations or kids who are in poverty or kids who speak English as a second language, we've got to help all these young
yes.
kids do better. They're our future workforce, Twanda.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And when you look at in the STEM area, that they are actually bringing people in from other countries to fill these positions, that should not be.
Well, and, you know, that gets back to the equity issue that we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier as well, is that we know in Georgia, STEM jobs are going to grow at twice the rate of other non-STEM
right.
jobs. And so if you're a student in school right now and you're looking to move up out of poverty or even to, you know, move up and make more money, I mean, who among us aren't looking to make more money, you're going to want to really get your math skills up. But then we look at participation in STEM programs in our public schools, you know, how are students doing in their science mm-hmm. and their math, that there is a big disparity between white students and black and Hispanic
mm-hmm.
students. There's also a big disparity between low-income students and their more affluent counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as Steve mentioned, one of our fastest-growing populations are students living in poverty, and they do about half as well on their science and math test and end of school and excelling in those areas as their more affluent counterparts. And so it's a problem for the individual student and their family, but it's also a problem for our future workforce.
Absolutely.
If our fastest growing population is not exceeding in STEM, we're creating jobs that we can't fill.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with Atlanta being the kind of city that it is, always moving, progressing, you know, new people coming in, I mean, what is that going to be like?
Ongoing challenge. That's why we have this in here almost every year, like you said.
It's down there every year. Issue 10, No Opportunity School District, what now? You know that November voters in Georgia rejected a constitutional amendment to establish an opportunity school district that would have created a new state-run district with the authority to step in and run chronically failing schools. So what's going to happen now? I agree. What now? What do we do? I had a parent actually asked me about that. She was in DeKalb County, which a lot of their schools are actually on that list. And she was saying, well, what do we do now?
Well, that's why we teed this one up. It was like we realized that the constitutional amendment failed. And we also realized that we don't think people really disagree that we have to help these schools and not have our young children working in unperforming schools.
Right.
But we have to come together as a state with all of our business and legislative leaders and education leaders to figure out the solution.
Mm-hmm.
We have to give some kudos to Representative Tanner, who worked diligently behind the scenes before the session started, and then he dropped House Bill 338, which still had a lot of input in the first several days, and then last Friday on crossover day, it did cross over and moved on. It's affectionately called Plan B, but we see that that has a lot of hope and some good chances of passing the session.
I think, too.
And I think it's... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, too, that I don't know how we're going to do it, but parent involvement into their kids' education. I think we have to be our kids' biggest advocates, no matter, you know, if you live in poverty, where you live or where you come from, you've got to be an advocate in your child's education.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's important for your listeners, your parents, as we all get educated about what we can do to help, thinking about this new Plan B, as they're calling mm-hmm. it really is not a Plan B to the Opportunity School District.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that's significantly different than
mm-hmm.
what was initially proposed. This is not a state takeover, as was in the constitutional amendment. They're really looking at ways to identify struggling schools and figure out how to get more resources to them, you know, to help them put in place a plan to what would be good for this school. And one thing that I'm particularly excited about in this new legislation, which was not in the Opportunity School District legislation, was if a school decides to, you know, enter into this agreement, that there would be, I think it's within the first 60 to 90 days, an evaluation of the school. And I'm not talking about like Georgia Milestone test scores,
right,
but looking at the school and what are the barriers to learning? What does that community engagement look like? What are the instances of student mental health barriers? Mm. Like, what is not really helping the school and these students succeed? And so I think that's the first step, is to figure out, you know, what is the problem here? Accurately identify it. How can we get more parents involved? All of these things. And so I think that's a very positive thing that they have put in this bill.
Okay. Is there a place where we can go and see that bill and understand it?
Yes, you can go on the website for the Georgia House, and they can see a little link down the side for the bills and in progress and their status. So it's an easy way to do it.
Good deal.
Plus, our website has a lot of information about the legislative session.
What's your website?
GPEE.org.
Those are the top 10 issues, guys, to watch in 2017. The Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education does this every year. And just phenomenal for those of us who should be everybody, even if you don't have kids in school. You need to know what's going on. Again, these are our future leaders, our pipeline to work, and all of that. So we need to know what's going on. Can folks get this from you?
Absolutely. Just go to our website. They can download a copy there, gpee.org, and they also can find information about how they can request a free copy, a hard copy.
Good deal. Good deal. Phenomenal. We're going to be looking forward. Do you do anything midway to say we're catching up or we're doing good, or do you keep a report of that online?
Not technically online, but we do keep pushing information out throughout the year. One way to stay engaged in the top issues that are happening is three times a year we have host critical issue forums, which are free and open to the public, looking at a really in-depth look into one of these forums. Our next forum actually is coming up on April 20th, and this one is really exciting. We're going to be looking at the role of arts and arts education in developing a highly skilled workforce.
Ah, I think that's important in developing a well-rounded kid. But a lot of our schools have eliminated a lot of that stuff. So I don't know. But I pray that we will.
Well, we're hoping
find
that they'll
way.
Put it back in.
Exactly. We're praying that they'll find a way to make that work. A lot of kids are good at so many other things and creative spirits, and they're not even getting to expand that at home or at school. So.
That's
wonderful.
Exactly the focus on this forum is that the Georgia Council of the Arts is partnering with us on this, as well as Google. Google Fiber is looking for people in technology that have an arts background because they see them as being more creative and adding value to their business. So it really is going to be an exciting conversation.
That is going to be awesome. Again, that is April 20th, and you can go on the site and get more information about it. Dr. Steve Dolinger, President, Dr. Dana Rickman, Director of Policy and Research for the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. Give that website one more time.
GPEE.org.
All right. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Twanda.
Thank you.